Norman Mailer, I'd love you to go back to that piece on the 1960 convention. You spoke about, in effect, a sort of cramped stream of regulated, mediocre American life and a surging river underneath it of dreams and imagination and vision, which Kennedy came to embody. You wrote about John F. Kennedy at that convention. You said, yes, this candidate, for all his record, his good, sound, conventional, liberal record, has a patina of that other life, the second American life, the long electric night with the fires of neon leading down the highway to the murmur of jazz. A remarkable sentence. But my question is, what happened to that second American life? Where is it today?
Well, you could say it ended up in Abu Ghraib. We've gotten more and more and more pleasure-loving as a country. Kennedy opened the gates, and the desire in America, and it's always present in a democracy. If you're free to do what you want to do, most people want to have a good time, and once they start to have a good time, they want to have a good sensuous time. And so the sensuality in America has increased. Who could have dreamed back in 1960 that you could watch a porny movie any night on TV if you want to pay a few bucks? And if you didn't want to pay a few bucks, you could watch a few of the cable stations and have it. The sexuality is everywhere now. The camera is one of the elements that has jazzed up American life to the point where it's half insane. I keep thinking that those kids, those young soldiers in Abu Ghraib who were performing all those atrocities on those Iraqis, what they were thinking of was not how they're humiliating these people. What they were thinking is, man, wait till I send it back to my friends. They'd never believe it unless I send the photograph. They were delighted with the photograph. You can see them giggling in these pictures. You know, it's going to, the guy's thinking this is going to frost Gus's nuts. One of them's thinking, and the girl's thinking, wow, Dolores will hate me forever when she sees this. And so on. Well, this is where that great love of freedom and action and excitement and surprise that was developing in the 60s of the Underground River has now come out we're perverted all over the place. You know, and then the Muslims hate us. They hate us because they consider us absolutely the great Satan. It got away. It got away because half of it got expressed. The desire to be free, to have a good time, to be what one wanted to be, developed one way or another, willy-nilly, it developed over the years. It started with Kennedy, and it got bigger and bigger and bigger. The other half of it, that we have a huge responsibility in our souls to make a better world, make a world that's more equitable, more interesting, more creative, more elevated, that got lost. Why did it get lost? Because they were the corporations having to mop up the money stream with profit. You know, my notion is not that what we need is a socialist economy, but I wouldn't mind seeing a mixed economy, half socialist, half small business. There's no need for the corporations. There are certain kinds of economic activities that require huge assets. There's no reason why government can't do that as well as the corporations, given a proper chance, without having the corporations sinking their wolf fangs into government ventures all the time. Small business is another matter. People who are in small business are not corporate business people at all. They're the opposite. They take chances all the time. A small businessman lives by his wits. He lives with his fears. He has an existential life. He never knows quite how it's going to turn out. People who join corporations are the same as people who join governments, the government work. They want security. But the difference is that there's no upper spiritual or moral scheme attached to the corporation. Just bullshit. Bullshit about how noble and honest and wonderful they are when all they're interested in is the bottom line.
Norman Mailer, you wrote unforgettably about the hip existentialist dimension of John F. Kennedy's heroism in the Pacific, specifically swimming all night to a safe island while he was towing that engineer McMahon with a strap in JFK's own mouth. Kennedy had seen death a lot of times, actually, and you wrote that maybe he had cured himself by looking at it. You wrote, one thinks of that 3-mile swim with the belt in his mouth and McMahon holding it behind him. There are pestilences which sit in the mouth and rot the teeth. In those 5 hours, how much of the psyche must have been remade for to give vent to the bite in one's jaws and yet use that rage to save a life? It is not so very many men, you wrote, who have the apocalyptic sense that heroism is the first doctor. That was Kennedy in the Pacific. My question has to do with John Kerry. Why are people so grudging, in a way, about validating, acknowledging his own heroism in Vietnam? And also, why has not that existential dimension of Kennedy's appeal, why don't we see it in John Kerry?
Well, one reason is that Kerry's heroism is not so extraordinary as Kennedy's. I mean, he was heroic, but Kennedy's was apocalyptic heroism, if you will. So there was that. The other is that Kerry, profoundly as a politician, they're always talking about how he's always trimming his sails, how he's always shifting his given. He happens to be a very good windsurfer. Well, what do you do when you're windsurfing? You have to have a high sensitivity for the smallest yaw in the wind. You have to know when the wind's going to shift that 15 degrees, because that's what you need in windsurfing. So he is that way politically. I think he's probably always been that way. He comes from such a mixed background of so many situations up and down that he is immensely sensitive to the immediate. And that's his strength, but it's also in politics and get you into very bad repute. Because he won't stay, just as when he's sailing, he won't stay with a bit of wind the moment he knows it's going to shift. So in politics, he can't stay with a given program, come hell or high water, because he knows enough to know when it shifts, he should shift with it. And this gets people absolutely maddened about him. What may be his subtlest strength might be the worst thing about him, is seen as the worst thing about him. So he, you know, I was thinking maybe he should be someone like, you know, he should have been Secretary of State, perhaps. He would have been wonderful that way, seeing what the little shifts in countries as he's dealing with them and all that. But in any event, he's running for president. He's going to always drive people nuts, because they'll always be changing his mind. That's part of him. That's his strength and that's his weakness. He's the exact opposite of Bush that way. He doesn't dare to change his mind. It's hard enough for Bush to hold one idea in his mind. Is he going to change it? My God, to go for that agonizing business of getting the next idea? No. He holds right. Bush claims that he never changes his mind. The fact of the matter is he's changed it more times than Kerry in the last few years. You know, compassionate conservatism, whatever happened to that?
But is that the metaphor for John Kerry, the windsurfer? I mean, it approaches flight, actually, but it's also sort of the ultimate kind of trimming.
Well, I would use that as a metaphor for him. He's the windsurfer. And so that... The shifts he's always making aren't what bother me about him. What bothers me about him is I don't know if he has a basic idea. In other words, once he becomes president, I could see where he could become an immensely popular president, because he could tie the country together in a way Bush can't. He could unify the country to a degree. Even the conservatives might not hate him too much when they realize how much of a conservative he is as well. But on the other hand, is there something that he's willing to fight for? I always felt the worst thing with Bill Clinton is there was no political idea he was ready to die for, the way, let's say, Mario Cuomo was willing to lose an election because he believes he was so opposed to capital punishment that he threw his career as governor into the pot. I will not have capital punishment. And it was one of the reasons he lost to Pataki. Cuomo had that kind of guts. He had death guts as a politician. Clinton didn't have it. I don't know that Kerry has it. I think Kerry will try to make the best possible world he can make under the circumstances. But he's not the kind of cook who says, there's only one kind of soup I want to make, and I need the ingredients, and if I don't have the ingredients, I'll make the nearest approximation of that soup. His whole feeling is, well, let's see what's in the cupboard. Let's see what spices we use.
Do you have a guess as to why John Kerry has not developed those Kennedy-ish dimensions of hipness, of the existential hero?
Well, I think he was a hero in battle because I'm sure he has a lot of moxie, to use Kennedy's favorite word. But I don't think his lifestyle was heroic. In other words, he didn't have a family that insisted you be heroic. The Kennedys were a very tough family. You damn well had to produce and deliver in that family. You know, they when they played touch football, they might just well have been playing tackle football. It was pretty rugged. I think Kerry grew up in a much more developed and sophisticated and less elevated economically environment. I mean, his parents were very wealthy, but they weren't financial leaders like Joe Kennedy. And so I think he grew up in pieces and parts. His personality developed as he went. And because it developed as he went, it changed as he went. In other words, he's no longer the fellow who made that wonderful speech about what are you going to ask the last man to say at the end of the war in Vietnam. That's, he's not that man anymore. He's a man who changes. It's very hard to talk about him. Sometimes I'll feel a strong sense of predictability about certain people. With Kerry, I don't pretend to understand him.
Norman Mailer, what happened to hipdom? What happened to the white Negro, the existential hero? And where do we look now for those magical figures that embody it? I mean, the likes of Muhammad Ali or Marilyn Monroe or Miles Davis or Norman Mailer or Julia Child, for that matter, or Marlon Brando.
Julia Child. That's my favorite, maybe. Oh, it's a different era. There's much more sophistication now. We felt, rightly or wrongly, we felt a little bit as if we were pioneers. We were discovering a new world. You know, we believe sex is marvelous. You just got to get into it. Now, it's a mark of, what can I say? It's a mark of inferiority if you're not sophisticated about sex. So there have been profound changes. We brought on some of those changes. Not all of them turned out well. The point is, if you want to be an innovator, you've got to recognize you may not necessarily sleep with a perfectly calm conscience afterward.
You always wanted to run for president and make a revolution in the consciousness of our time. Is it too late to draft Norman Mailer?
I think it's kind of late, yes.
Would you serve if elected?
Would I serve if elected? What was the... William Buckley said I'd resign if elected. I'd serve. Of course I'd serve. How could... You know, but I don't have the stuff anymore. I really don't. It just as well. I wouldn't make a good politician. I'd love to have it as a mouthpiece. What I would do is talk for 3 hours. I'd work up my mental muscles so I could talk for 3 hours instead of one.
We would listen. Norman Mailer, it's such a pleasure and a privilege to talk with you this afternoon.
Thank you. Thank you, Chris.